You are listening to episode 162 of the Further Bros Tech Podcast. Big Brother is watching you print.
Episode 162 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is No Shave November the 2nd, 2014. I'm Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my somewhat spooky world champion brother, James Furlough.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, baby.
Dude, it was a little maybe touch and go at the end there. Maybe.
Hey. All that matters is the W. Big old W on the scoreboard. Oh, baby. World champions. Everybody in the parade was doing, they're holding up the threes. Yeah, we're not number one. This is our third time. It's cool. Or so I was told.
Is it third time ever or just recently?
Just recently. This is the dynasty phase of the Giants. Mm. So I think it's actually their eighth total.
That pitcher at the end is pretty good. Sounds like.
Yeah. Madison Bumgarner. That's a heck of a statement, James. Really, really sticking your neck out there, making a... He might be one of the best ever. he's definitely ranking. Yeah, he's pretty good. A bit scary for everybody else, turns out. My favorite part about him is, and I realize this is a tech podcast, not a sports podcast, but, you know, what the heck. Everyone's wanting to talk about sports. Favorite part about the guy is that he doesn't actually have that like vicious of pitches. Like a couple years back, 5 years ago to be precise, Tim Lincecum was the main pitcher, and he just had this ferocious fastball and this crazy slider, and just like he could just throw these pitches that nobody could hit. Whereas this guy, it's just like, yeah, he's a fastball, but it's not the fastest. I mean, his curveball curves, but it's not the curviest. Like the deal is, it is like, he just is a machine who never slows down. It's like, you know, nobody can hit a pitcher when they're fresh because they're fresh. You wait till a little bit later and they start to get a little bit sloppy, and then it gets easier to hit. And he just never gets sloppy ever. He pitched 210 pitches in the World Series, James.
Wow.
That's insane.
That's a lot. Okay.
Yes, that's a tremendous number. That's a tremendous number. Most guys would throw their shoulder out after that many. And he was like, ready to pitch again. Put me on couch. I just loved it. So what did you do for Halloween?
Anything cool? I worked. Wow. Story of my life.
All night?
Most of it, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
You didn't give out any candy? You didn't?
Jesse was in charge of that. Yeah. Mm.
Well, man, you're really, really festive this week.
Sorry, really I've got a headache.
Helping out with the show intro.
Yeah. No, my life has been pretty boring. I did replace a window this weekend, so that was cool.
That is very cool.
On the second floor, had a big ladder. It was kind of scary.
Well, it is scary, actually.
But, yeah, I'm here. A slight headache. Ready to go. I know. You know, you just can't be on fire every day. Sometimes you got to have an off day.
It's true. I know the feeling, man. That was my day yesterday. Yesterday was a bit of an off day.
Yeah. I did laser tag yesterday, which is fantastic, by the way.
Laser tag?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, it was actually pretty funny. We got invited by some friends to go play laser tag, and Jesse wasn't feeling well, and so she was like, no, I'm good, and you go ahead. And so I did. So I drove like an hour to go play laser tag with a bunch of high schoolers.
Nice.
We were not in my church, by the way. I don't know them, but I know their parents. And yeah, and so it was cool, which the parents played too, which made it worth it. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was pretty funny. I just went and played laser tag, and I got rocked the first time around. So I came out, and you know, they print off all the stats and everything because they rightly so assume that it's a bunch of geeks who are playing. And so, you know, so I'm looking at everyone's scores and stuff, and I find the guy who, you know, he played the best out of everybody. And so I start getting his stuff, and I'm learning his stats and, like, picking out how he's playing. I start asking him questions and everything. Second round, I ended up getting second place to his first place, so I made some improvements there. I was happy.
Nice.
Which means he didn't tell me all his secrets, because he's still... his score was still a lot bigger than mine, too, which was like...
Yo, yay, man. You gotta...
I still don't get it.
You're just there to help, not to replace yourself, right? You know?
Yeah, yeah. But now laser tag. It's a pretty fun little game.
I like it. It was awesome.
So besides baseball and Halloween, did you do anything? Did you dress up this year?
Oh, I did. I did. You didn't check out the Instagram? I got a lot of likes on the Facebook repost of the whole thing. I was proud of myself.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's actually like the most legit Halloween costume I've probably had since fifth grade, I'd guess. Mm. But see, the dilemma was, like, we knew we needed bearded costumes that would go well, you know, because there's a lot of options out there. But generally, you know, like, I'm fully into – I started No Shave November back in August. and, you know, I'm not about to slow down, not going to give it any trim. So it's like, you know, I got to just stick with whatever I've got. So I went as a Civil War officer. And particularly a union officer. Everybody asked me, you know, which side are you on? I was like, union. The Confederates was $20 more for the costume, so it made it easy. but I ended up going to this party in San Francisco, and I'm really glad I dressed up, like, legit, because everybody there was, like, crazy dressed up. There was a guy that went as Bane from Batman, and it was scary because he was, like, he looked just like Bane and talked like him, too. Like, holy cow, this is, like, real. The only problem that I had with this party was that the tickets that we got were VIP tickets, and it was an open bar, which usually means what they're going to do is they're going to have, like, so many people in line that you'll be able to get, like, one drink an hour. So yeah, it's fine. Not a big deal. Like, you know, just that's pretty fair, you know. Like, yeah, it's kind of expensive, but the city's expensive, you know. So it's, you know, it works out. Well, it turns out they didn't overbook the VIP section, and it took like 5 minutes to get a beer. And when you walked up and if you said, hey, can I get two beers, like you're going to take it to somebody else, no questions. They just gave you two beers. So you walked away with two beers. And I might have over-enjoyed myself, overindulged. Oh, my goodness. The next morning, I felt pretty bad, James. I felt pretty bad.
Yeah. As your older brother, you should feel bad.
I did.
It's more like, what's with my depravity here?
Let me yeah, mind. You know... the problem is it's like, you know, it's the classic. If there's got to be limiting factors, if it costs me money, if I have to go to the bar, if I got to do a number of things, they're easy to stay reasonable. I don't need to drive. I have no responsibility. It's free. It's quick. Yeah, pretty quick, you've like lose track of count. I mean, like three in, you lose track how many you drank. Because why should I keep count? It's all paid for. And, yeah, so, turns out I'm still a child at heart.
I will admit I don't have that problem.
Well, you know.
I get two and I'm like, I'm done. I'm tapped. I'm going to go take a nap.
I'm going to go take a nap. Oh, man. Yeah. See, for me, the worst is, like, it loosens me, like, especially in a setting, like, if it's just a couple of people hanging out, after three beers, I'm sort of like, I'm tapped, I'm good. But in a giant crowd like that, I get so jazzed by that many people that, like, I just go, I'm like a five-year-old. It's terrible. But
I understand. I found that I'm a social eater. So I understand
you're
what
what?
You're saying there. I'm a social eater.
yeah, I get that.
So I know what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah, thankfully, I'm a social eater. I'm just an eater. So if there's a lot, if there's food there, I'll eat it. Even if it's like socially awkward. Like, everybody else has stopped. You should stop too. Like, no, I gotta keep eating, guys, because I'm fat on the inside. I may not be fat on the outside anymore, but on the inside, I still am. Yeah. Anyways, you know what we're not here to talk about? We're not here to talk about our depths of depravity and immorality.
Off the rails already.
I know, right? This week, like every week, we'll be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera. And by that, we mean the soap operas, corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and of course, the technology they're developing. But before we get into the heart of the show, James has got a short disclosure he needs to throw our way.
Yes, and it's important this week. I work for Hewlett-Packard. However, I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions. And I'll say that later on in the show, too.
Okay, good to know. If you want to follow us throughout the week, we're all over the social media. As I already mentioned, I have an Instagram account that you're more than welcome to follow me at. It's NextWiggin4. I've also got a Twitter where I'll tweet. I'll probably tweet on Tuesday, just, you know, knowing me, my normal
non-partisan, Tuesday?
But really, man, election day.
Oh, yeah, totally.
It's normally where I like to throw in my, like, non-partisan, just sort of over-the-top political satirizing, which not everybody appreciates.
For? What are you voting for?
Anything we've got a bunch in California? We have a bunch of really ridiculous props. They're either ridiculously obvious or ridiculously stupid, one way or the other, but they're pretty much roundly ridiculous. But we've got one kind of cool. It is like actually one election in our state that's kind of a fun one because it's people are getting like crazy about it, but it's the state superintendent of schools, and it's like it's like a big deal. And you're like, who the heck is the state superintendent of schools? Like, I've never cared about this, but like movie stars are making commercials for the up and coming dude. There's like tons, like tens of millions of dollars coming in from unions. Like, it's just nuts. It's like, it's crazy how much money and attention's being spent on a position that has effectively no power. So it's just sort of like a, I don't know, it's for the, from the horse race perspective, it's kind of fun, but this is me trying to be really non-political on this show, which is normally my goal.
And you're trying very hard. I appreciate that. It's easy for me. I am definitely in the low information diet right now.
Oh man,
political happenings, as you could tell, because I'm like, what's Tuesday?
Tuesday?
So Oregon only does the absentee mail-in ballot. That's it. Doesn't actually have places you go to vote.
What?
Yeah.
Are you serious?
So I have my ballot. I haven't filled it out yet, but I have it. And I got to drop it off somewhere, put it in the mail or something. I can't remember.
It's weird. Yeah. I have a...
It's Oregon.
I'm a mail-in voter, which means that I can drop it off. I got to figure out where I got to drop it off, though, because guess what I'm doing Tuesday?
Voting?
Yes, hopefully. As long as
traveling
it doesn't interfere
to
with my...
Singapore?
No. I will be voting as long as it doesn't interfere with my ability to watch Interstellar. Which comes out Friday.
Does that come out Friday?
On Tuesday. Yeah.
Wait. I don't understand.
Yeah,
why are you watching it on Tuesday?
Because I'm getting a pre-screening. I got the inside track. I'm cool. Yeah. I'm Hollywood style. I know people who know people. Also, Lockheed
More like
Martin.
My cousin knows people, but yeah.
You what?
It's more like a cousin knows people, but whatever.
Yeah. Lockheed Martin. You know, that's they're cool. they're helping out.
I want to watch that movie.
That'll be fun.
Looks
me
good.
Too.
So don't tell me about the movie, but yeah, let me know if it's worth it.
Okay, I will. I'll give you the thumbs up, thumbs down rating.
Yeah.
I've got a feeling I'm going to give it the thumbs up.
Yeah, me too.
Kind of in my.
Well, did I say it on a couple podcasts a few weeks ago? It's like I've decided that I'm more like. There are certain actors and actresses that I like, and if they're in it, I'm going to like the movie. It's just the way it is. Amy Adams, I believe I've said before, is an example of that. Pretty much every single movie she's been in, I like. Her and I seem to agree on entertainment style.
And then we have similar tastes.
Yeah. It's kind of movies she likes to be in, I like to watch. It works. And then Matthew McConaughey is another one where I just, for whatever reason, I like the movies he likes.
McConaughey. Yeah. I feel that.
Dreamboat.
Anne Hathaway's in it too. And
she's close to one of those people.
Yeah.
Close. I would say I don't 100% align with her. Unlike Amy Adams, it's 100%. It's kind of creepy.
Yeah, I get you. I get that. Yeah, Michael Caine's kind of my dude. If Michael Caine's in it, probably don't like it.
Mm. That may be true for me, but I haven't noticed.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of anything. And Michael Caine's almost never the main character. He's always a supporting actor. But he's awesome.
True.
Anyways, what's your...
Yeah, so I may not be tweeting or anything on Tuesday, but if I do, it will be at James Furlow. Or jamesfurlow.com or wherever. James Furlow.
Google it.
I recovered there at the end.
I gotcha. And also everything we talk about on the show today, all the clicks and links and all the videos, anything that comes up that we discuss in brief or in long, is going to be at furloughbros.com. That's the main hub of our universe. Go check it out. See what's up. We got the YouTube video. We got the podcast links. We got all sorts of stuff. It's a good time. And, you know, it's got our name on it. So that's kind of cool too. Got that going for us, which is nice.
I want to kick this off talking about the Book of Face. I think I'll be honest, man, I had trouble picking articles, so we make it into this and I may be lame and we switch to another one.
Fair enough.
So just put that out there. So last week Facebook was getting some flack for the control they hold over the media, the press. And a few weeks back, there was this thought of this idea of the freedom of the press and free speech and things like that. They're it's really controlled by a select few, like Google and Facebook.
Yeah,
and it's kind of like free speech goes where they would like it to go. And there was this whole thing about Facebook censoring negative, articles and stories and, cause they only want to show stuff that make people happy. Cause they want positive feelings associated with Facebook. And so there was this whole thing where they were Facebook was getting a whole bunch of flack for it. And this particular author on Pando Daily, he goes, "Dude, we shouldn't be looking at Facebook. We should be looking at Google. Those guys are totally manipulating everything, to do their thing." And it was talking about just search results and Google News and all that stuff. And which I haven't been to Google News in, man, it must be at least a year, maybe two. That was a place, and now it's not anymore.
Right.
I mean, have you noticed that? Did you ever visit it to begin with?
I didn't visit it a lot, but the only time I have ever really spent a lot of time there is if I'm looking for a particular article by topic, and I know it's a news article, so what I would do is I would go to Google News and search there, but now they've got the Google News tab, so you just sort of sort by, news articles, but I don't know.
Okay. So anyways, so that was kind of this thing. Well, Facebook is giving people a reason to kind of freak out again.
As they are wont to do.
Yeah. So Facebook gave the publishers a proposal this last week. And it was essentially, they said, you know, if you guys want to, you know, get your news out in front of people, why don't you just, instead of publishing your stories on your own website, why don't you just send them straight to us? We'll save everything on our servers, and we'll show them, like, you know, next to ads and in our applications and stuff. You know, we'll just, we'll manage all the sharing for you. Don't worry about it. And so it was like, so you want to have complete control over our articles?
What, yeah, that's
what will we, what will we know who's reading it? No. But
jeez,
you still don't have to worry about storing it anymore. We'll take care of that expense for you. And because we have it on our servers and we know everything about it, you know, we could do a better job of matching it with the right person is kind of their
wow.
thing.
Wow. We'll opt. Yeah. Wow. Wow.
Yeah. Kind of a bold Facebook. Really bold. I just well, imagine Google being like, oh, I can't believe they just said that. That's so awesome.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, and it'll totally work because, you know, if they're right, they can, if they're able to generate more traffic than any other means. Like, let's say you're TechCrunch, right? You're very well known. You've got a lot of followers. A lot of people subscribe to your RSS. You're going to post things to Facebook and Google, and when somebody wants to know about the new Apple Watch or whatever, you're going to pop up in a bunch of different areas. If they search for it on Facebook, if they search for it on Google, it'll pop up all over the place. And
people search for articles on Facebook? Is that a thing?
No, not really. Okay, but I mean, it shows. You know, like they show it shows up in my TechCrunch shows up in my newsfeed, right? And and that generally, but they've got all these different places that they're, you know, Bing stuff. They got all these different places where they are generating traffic, right? But let's say you're a smaller outfit, like, I don't know, the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. We're not that much smaller than TechCrunch, but, you know, it's noticeable. It's not nothing.
Barely. Barely noticeable.
And,
on one side.
You know, but we would, but we sit there and we go, so we don't really have the name power. And, you know, we want to get out there. And Facebook says, I'll tell you what, Furlough Bros Tech Podcast, we will prioritize you over TechCrunch every single time if you host everything through us. We get the control of the information. It's your name. It's your content. It's your revenue. But you know, we get all the analytics, and we'll guarantee you beat TechCrunch in people's news feeds every time because you're publishing through us.
I love
it. Totally see us or you know, sell your soul for to get onto the Facebook gravy train, you know. And then at some point, if TechCrunch can't get in there anymore, they're like they've got no, you know, all of a sudden all of their Facebook traffic dries up. And if it was a significant part of their traffic, then they might start to slowly consider it too, you know. And if it kind of takes off and Google does something similar, I could totally see this working just because, you know, it's sort of a prisoner's dilemma. It doesn't require everybody to jump onto it. You know, it requires everybody to band together and not do it in order for it to not eventually slide into victory. Because as you stated, there's such a driver of traffic. If it weren't for, you know, they're so big, a medium-sized blog that decides to go big time and compete with the big boys by, you know, like I said, selling their soul to Facebook, you know, that could make a discernible difference. You know, especially if Facebook knows that if, you know, Facebook's smart. If they, you know, if they optimize your article, how they're posting your information so that it, you know, surfaces well on Google, all you know, until Google starts to actively deprioritize that kind of stuff, you know, I don't know. It's interesting. I could see Reddit get into that sort of thing too. You know.
Yeah, totally.
I don't know. Reddit's a little bit of a different case because it's so open source and their community is built around that sort of stuff. But at the same time, they totally do that with the, you know, with the mods of the different, you know, moderators of the different subreddits that will go through and, you know, will slash certain content. They don't want it to make it to the top of it. And, you know, and it'll be a big deal when they get discovered to doing it, you know, somebody can prove demonstrably true. You guys were, you know, filtering out articles you shouldn't be because you, you know, you're making money from the guys that you're not filtering out. And so, yeah, I don't know. I feel like it ends up that way no matter what. It's fun back when the internet was free.
Yeah, right? You know. Consolidations can be tough.
It is tough. And it's funny. I keep thinking back to that stupid article we read yesterday where the vast, you know, more than the majority of traffic is generated by fewer than 30 companies. You know, and it's like, even if it's not the majority of content, it's the majority of traffic, which means that these guys are the big users. And I don't know. It just... It's not the same world it used to be, man. It's I don't know.
True. By the way, just so you know, I'm enjoying a delicious glass of eggnog right now. It's that time of year.
Oh man.
Oh, it's so good.
It is that time of year.
I love eggnog. I don't even cut it with milk. It's just a full deal.
Who cuts it with milk?
People, I don't know, my wife being one of them.
That's weird. No, you're supposed to see, the deal is you're supposed to cut it with whiskey, and you know you've put enough in it when you could read a newspaper through it. That's
all right.
It's not, I don't do that. I when I drink eggnog, I drink it virgin generally.
Me too. Or with milk, because I want it to last longer.
See, that's weird. That's weird to me.
You should try it. You should try it before you knock it.
I'm not going to try that. What's the point of that? Just get more eggnog. Dude, it costs like $2.
It's really good, too. Need to make it
last longer. Jeez.
All right, your turn.
So, good news, everybody. HTML5 is finally ready for use. So all those apps and websites that we've been preparing all this time, it's time for them to go live.
Yeah!
Perfect timing.
They've only been working on it for like...
8 years, was it?
8 years? Is that it?
And W3C, they have officially ratified the HTML5 standard. Like how, it is absolutely complete.
Ironic is it, like, how slow they move in a medium that is known for moving so fast.
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of like, it's done. You know, the adoption has all happened. We've all moved on to apps, and they're like, and now we're done.
Yeah. Like, it actually, like...
What are we late to the party there?
Yeah, it would make, like, a funny, like... movie video. I don't even like, yeah, it's just yeah, exactly, it's super late to the video.
I feel like that should be like a running gag in a sitcom where there's this guy who is always late, you know. Yeah. It's like something finishes, it's done, and they're like, hey guys, I'm here, let's do this. Like, what?
Yeah, right.
No, you missed it, it already happened. Oh man, you know. And
it's sort of, yeah. It's sort of like the dude who's like, everybody is like, all right, guys, we've got to come to an agreement. We're going to meet Monday night, December the 7th, and we're going to go and get pizza and, you know, watch the game. Everybody's like, all right, very awesome, good. You know, like, let's all vote. We've all, you know, this huge committee, everybody's deciding. And then finally somebody pops in and goes, hey, guys, I got a really good idea. You know what we should do? We should get dinner on December the 7th, get pizza, maybe watch the game. And everyone's like, yeah, good idea. Well, I mean, it's funny. I understand what they're
saying. It's not even quite that bad. It's more like they were listening to the entire discussion, and they got finished, and everyone agreed, and they went, okay, here's the official ruling. Yeah. Monday night, we're going to get pizza. And everyone's like, yeah, we know. Thank you for restating what we all know.
It's a tough, it's weird. And it's funny because, I mean, like, you know, on one hand, it's like it's absolutely important what they do, and kind of making it a standard and having it be like an official thing that it allows the smaller guys, you know, it allows upstarts to have something to aim for. Yet at the same doesn't give Microsoft any wiggle room. No. Our browser totally works on the latest standard. Like, it's awesome. Yeah, nice job. Now you actually have something you have to hit. You know, and the reality of it is they basically took WebKit and ratified WebKit, which is the backbone that Apple, the open source backbone that Apple launched with iOS. Google took over it after a couple of years and before they forked it into their own thing. I don't know. It's an interesting dilemma because it's necessary, and it was supposed to happen first. And the irony of all of this is, if they had done it first, if we had waited for HTML5 to be ratified before everybody started to adopt it, nobody would ever adopt it. So it's right. Like it had to happen this way. And, you know, Steve Jobs, you know, was the big pusher. And we're just going to finish it for you guys. And then.
Yeah, that was back in the day when the iPhone was all going to be about Safari. Yeah. Apps were not even a twinkle in his eye.
Yeah.
Apps no were done. Yeah. Turns out he was wrong there.
Yeah. I think he was surprised. I think everybody was surprised.
Maybe because it wasn't finished yet. It didn't work. Maybe it would have. Yeah. Maybe we'd all be doing stuff through the browser right now. That actually sounds miserable for the record.
Right, yeah.
Apps are pretty awesome.
Yeah, everybody that I know that has a Chromebook hates it. Like, as their primary computing device. That's not true. Yeah. I know a couple people that really
you
like
know
it,
someone who have Chrome as their primary computing device? Wow.
Chromebooks? Yeah.
I'm sorry.
And I love Chrome, but, yeah, I mean...
Not as the only thing. I'm with you.
Yeah. Technically I use a Chromebook as my probably my primary platform. Well, you know, especially when I'm in my, you know, I don't know, but yeah, it's fun. You know, it's cool. It's important. It's a big deal, I guess. But
just big deal. Cool.
Yeah, I kind of want to buy one of the HTML5 shirts now, though. Just really get on the whole perfect timing bandwagon.
5.1's coming down the pipe, so...
Oh, baby. I want to know when 6 is coming. Can we start using that yet?
Yeah, I want to know what features they're going to include in it. That's what's going to make it super special.
Oh, I know exactly.
Because, you know, with 5, right, it was like the video tag was huge, and then the canvas was huge.
But they'll ratify more and more third party like actual graphics engines. Somebody will open source some open source graphic engine will actually get incorporated into it and be a requisite, because that's the next step, is to be doing full blown 3D graphics in the browser. And right now you have to have plugins and all sorts of stuff that come along with it, which effectively that's the whole point. Was you had what's that one thing called? It was Java, not Java. Yeah, thank you. Flash. Flash was effectively a third-party closed-source engine that replicated the functionality of HTML5. HTML5 allowed them to bake it into the browsers. Right now, that's how third-party graphics engines are, you know, high-end graphics engines are operating. And they'll just have to move something into the browser that's an actual Java engine or something that is part of the "this is how it works" period, you know, and there'll be slow adoption there, but it'll allow even more graphically intensive processes to be taken there. And Google will really push that, because that'll allow them to do A, gaming, and B, cloud-based gaming and cloud-based productivity suites like, you know, SketchUp and, you know, build an Inventor replacement or a SOLIDWORKS replacement. So I bet that's the next big move.
Okay. Cool. I believe you.
Thank you.
Just calm down. It's all right.
I'm chilling
so, out. So, we talked, I'm going to steal it from you. We talked last week, you know, a little bit about currency. Like, I give that little space there. Mm-hmm. And we talked about how they were going to lose. That seems to be coming true faster than we even predicted.
Yeah.
Which I don't think we put a timeline on it, though. It could be pretty fun to put a timeline on it. Yeah. So, again, I know this is yours. I'm totally stealing it from you.
It's all right. Okay. So, a couple of thoughts about the mobile payment world. Number one, Apple Pay is already the number one in mobile payments. They got more in 3 days. Within 3 days of it going live, they had more credit cards attached to actual Apple payments and ready
to
go
really
live.
Which really says more about the status of the industry than how amazing Apple is.
This is a little bit of both. I mean, but I agree. Okay. It's basically, it was a non-existent technology that Apple is coming in and showing. This is how you're actually supposed to do it. Make it super
simple. Of course,
simple.
This will be more interesting in like 6 months as opposed to like 3 weeks or something. Just, you know, because of course it's going to be number one. You know, you're going to get people like me where I ran out to McDonald's and I bought something. I went, cool. It works.
Yeah, it works. Apple Pay.
Have you used it since?
Yeah. Went to McDonald's again. I used it. I tried to use it at Home Depot, and I still get the card error, which is annoying. And from what I understand, that will be the way it is for a while, because Home Depot's dumb. Where else? I have not been to Walgreens yet, even though I really want to. I haven't had an excuse to go there yet. I ask tons of people. I'm like, do you have a contactless payment here? You know, in case it's not obvious, you know?
Yeah.
Not a lot of them do. Apparently, Albany's not that cool. But I got to get over to Jamba Juice because I'm pretty sure that will work because I've used the tap to pay with them before. Nice. I mean, essentially, it's anywhere that offers NFC, it'll work. And
yeah, which is cool. I mean, that's the whole point.
Yeah, yeah. And so I'm pumped and excited to keep doing it. And I would say, I mean, like I said, I'm actively looking for it, you know? So when it exists, it's not like I'm going to walk in, pay for something, and then later on go, oh, man, I totally forgot. You know, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, and there's definitely the thing of it's, you know, part of the problem is the whole, you know, what comes first, chicken or the egg. You know, it's the fact that not everybody has contactless payments terminals up and running yet, you know. And I still predict this is the perfect time because, you know, now that everybody has to upgrade their terminals to be able to get the little chip reader things.
Oh, I know, which is miserable.
Yeah, well, and it's actually, you know, it's – and. The fact that everybody has to upgrade it already, the guys that are making terminals that do the chip and NFC, those are going to be the ones that, you know, people are going to buy those, all your mom and pop stores. The place where I get my burritos, that's what they're going to get. They're not, you know, and you'll be able to use it there. But yeah, so currency is, they were pretty proud out and loud that they were going to be, Apple wasn't going to touch them. They had their whole thing together. And really, truly, I feel like we should be calling it Walmart because that is the deal. I mean, like, it's Walmart's baby. It's
I love how they're just like, it's designed to avoid exorbitant fees from credit cards.
Oh, yeah. And like, cut into all of our profits.
Yeah, I'm like, since when was like 2% huge? I mean, yes, I realize you do a lot of sales and it results in a large number. I get it. No, this does not count as exorbitant. I'm sorry. You're being slightly greedy here. But
yeah. Well, I mean, if they could figure out a way to get rid of that, then cool. That'd be great.
Yeah, So, I mean, it's like the ironic part is they're probably investing just as much into the solution as they will save. And, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, and it's funny because it's like, I think what you know, there's just such shortcomings to the whole idea, because it's, you know, because it's one of the big things that everybody's pointing out, and actually I think this is the bigger deal, is the fact that Apple Pay fully divorces your payments from your personal information.
Yeah.
And that's what freaks them out more than anything, because
it's even, you know, what they do is they like essentially create out of thin air a credit card number.
Yeah.
And so it's all random. And so, you know, your bank obviously will know what it is, because they kind of separately somehow magically let the bank know what it is. But as far as the merchant is concerned, you are a new and different customer every single time.
Right.
Because, you know, they can't track you by a credit card number anymore, which is what they at least used to have that. And now that's gone. And so, you know, if you are into, you know, tracking people by their credit cards and you don't have a loyalty card, you just did lose a lot of information.
Yeah, you just disappeared, and that's incredibly valuable information to Walmart in particular, but it is to everybody. And the best part about currency as far as Walmart is concerned is that if you use it at Walgreens or CVS or Rite Aid or whatever, because they're kind of tapped into the whole back end of it, you know, they get all that data. They get to know what you're
paying. They wouldn't get that. That doesn't make any sense to me.
Sure. Well, I mean, it's one of those things where currency is going to be the one, or MDX, they're called. They'll compile all that information and they'll sell it to whoever wants to buy it, whoever it's worth that information to. And which, you know, since they're overlords of Walmart. And I think the deal is that how Walmart is basically positioned this is they're trying to sell it as a thing that's good for consumers, but it's not. It's all about getting all of your data from everywhere. They're trying to do what Facebook and Google is doing, because they realize how incredibly valuable that information is. And so their whole thing is they want, you know, your information from all of the different stores, and how they're selling it to the other retailers, how they got them to sign the contracts is, guess what? You sign up on this thing, you've got to give it over all of your personal information, but we're going to save you 2-4% per transaction, and that goes straight to your bottom line, because now you get direct access to bank accounts and you're not using credit cards anymore. I personally think that that's been the argument all along to all of these different companies. I don't think Walmart cares about the 2-4%. I mean, they care about it, it'd be awesome, but that's not where the real money
double
is.
Double the margins.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, but to Walmart, that's not their real. That's not.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
I actually and so I mean, obviously, one of the big deals this week was they got hacked, and which is just awesome. You know, security through obscurity at its best. All of a sudden, they became a huge target, and somebody decided to take advantage of it and let everybody know. Oh, by the way. Your emails aren't secure on currency. And
yeah. But it was just one of those, I mean, who didn't see it coming? I mean, we talked about it last week, and like I said, it happened a little sooner than I thought, but you know, cool. And what was so fascinating about it was the second it happened, they instantly started backtracking, which it was like, you don't have a choice at that stage. Cause they were kind of silent on the whole issue, you know, outside of, you know, we were hearing about, you know, was it Rite Aid and CVS? They were kind of the two front runners of the entire issue, cause they were suddenly disabling stuff. But from the actual company itself, you know, they were kind of just quiet and just, you know, letting it be. They get hacked, and now it's like, okay, we're going to come out and start saying stuff. Which, you know, the first one they said was, we are working on an NFC solution. We're not going to, you know, just stick with the QR codes. We realize that's not as elegant. And then they're like, and we're not going to block other parties from doing their thing. Which you're like, yeah, if you accept the NFC, you don't have a choice. So
yeah.
Yeah, and so they were like, but we're not going to, even today, it sounded like we're not going to enforce the exclusivity anymore. And so you just sit there and go, guys, you're done. That's it. I'm sorry. Yeah. I mean, unless they can enforce the exclusivity up to the point where they've got their NFC solution ready to go. If they're kind of like, oh yeah, we're going to enable it next year, you're done. I mean, well, you cannot wait that long.
The only thing they could do, I think, is if they had an NFC solution and basically they went on a massive media campaign to say, if you use our thing instead of whatever other solution you have, we'll give you a 2% discount on whatever. You'll get to save money.
Track that if you can actually make good on that. You know,
yeah.
Because of the way it works. I just don't know if that's even possible.
But that would be the only thing you could do is to financially incentivize people to switch horses. But I think that's also the big reason why Apple has not opened the NFC to third parties yet, is because they don't even want to have the conversation about having another, you know, having, because the last thing, and I think I think Apple's whole position on not opening an NFC has, you know, there's a number of security issues that are around that they get to skirt around. There's a bunch of other things, because they could just make an app policy of, we don't allow third party payment systems, but you can use NFC. But by just having NFC closed, they don't even have the conversation. There's Google doesn't get a chance to put a Google wallet. You know,
yeah, we'll see. That'll change. Maybe not next year, but the year after. But yeah.
But my point is that if these guys can't get an NFC solution on the iOS platform, it doesn't matter. If their only option is a QR code, they could give you a 2% discount, but you have to use a QR code on the iPhone. Nobody will use it. It'll never take off. This has never happened. And not to mention, Google's quick enough where they'll say, if there's an actual working solution here for, you know, making things cheaper by tapping directly into your bank account, well, then we'll do that with the Google Wallet too. We won't use the credit card backend. Why would we? We don't have to. If we don't have to, we won't. And we'll become competitive. You know, I just sit there and go,
customers don't care about that because we're not, I mean, we don't see that 2% on top of it or whatever the rate is.
You'd have to give it directly to consumers.
Yeah, that's harder to do than we'd like it to be.
But I know.
You have to somehow say, charge your card, and then before they charge, detect what it is and then give a discount. Which I'm like, can you even do that? You have to have them like pre-swipe or something.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I'd sit there and I go, that I agree. I think technologically there's got to be a way, but that's your only option if you even want to stand a chance. Otherwise,
you give it to the cashiers where like they ask, how are you going to pay for this? And then if you tell them, they'll give you a discount or not. I guess that's the other way you would do it. And then you just have to hope that they're not friends and just like don't care and just give the discount to everybody.
Yeah.
Because you wouldn't be able to tell if they were doing that or not. You'd just be like, wow, this one teller gets a ton of currency customers.
Yeah, right.
Pretty much every single one of them. That's weird.
People just swiping with their credit card. You know, yeah, I agree, man. I totally agree. I think that
that's the other like showstopper, by the way. It just it works via ACH, so it just taps right into your bank account. I just don't see that happening. I think there are too many people who they shop from their credit card because you get awards and points and miles and all that stuff, and you don't get that with ACH.
Right, which I guess, you know, it wouldn't affect me that much, except for I don't know what the consumer protections on ACH are, but I know that they exist with Visa and MasterCard. Exactly. Like, if somebody gets my credit card information, my debit card information, I've got protections. I've got a whole slew of them. And I sit there and I go, yeah, if I don't have those same protections, I'm absolutely not using that. That's what that 2-4% is all about, is it's paying for, you know, effectively, and that's part of that whole bottom line, is it pays and somebody steals my digital life.
I would say it's paying for that, and it's also paying for future innovations and investments in the system. Yeah. You know, and I mean, yeah, sure, there's probably some well-paid people in the group as well, but you know, yeah, I
I don't think that's horrifying. It's kind of like
credit cards and debit cards. The system is not broke from a customer standpoint. I would even argue it's not really even broke from a retail standpoint. It's just, you know, it's one of those where you go, look, you guys tried, you had a solution. It's not going to work. Quit spending your money now. It's okay.
Well, they just have to stick with they're going to have to stick with the whole put in your phone number for, well, but this all comes back to currency had nothing to do with Rite Aid and CVS. Those weren't the guys. They were going to benefit because they were going to get that, you know, 2-4% kickback because they weren't being charged by the credit card companies. And in exchange, they were going to give their data to Walmart. That was the direction it was going to go. You know, and I think as far as they're concerned, they don't really care. Like, okay, well, that was fun. Myers, for example, has already openly stated it, you know, a chain that if you've ever gone to Michigan, you know exactly who they are. They've already, you know, said, no, we're going to allow it to keep going with Apple Pay. Like, we're not going to turn off our NFC because that's stupid. Like, why would we do that? And and because I think they understand from their perspective what it was, what the exchange was, and it's not worth it. Why would we give up one customer for that? It's not, you know, it's not going to affect us enough. Yeah, it would have been cool, but we're not going to worry about it. It's Walmart that's really, you know, has invested and really hopes for this, and they're the big losers because now it's going to be even more difficult to keep, you know, if more and more people move in this direction and Apple's solution to these randomized single-use credit cards really, you know, credit card numbers really take off as the, you know, if Google Wallet implements something like that as well and all the NFC different, you know, platforms, then all of a sudden Walmart's in a world of hurt because now they really have a hard time tracking users and they have to completely rely on loyalty cards and stuff. And it's hard. That's just hard for them. They're going to lose one of their biggest weapons, which is big data. There's going to be an erosion of it, and they've got to get more creative about it, which, by the way, that's going to result in them just taking facial recognition scans of you, and they'll know when you enter this store. They'll know what aisles you stop at.
I was actually just thinking that in my head. I was like, dude, just do a retina scan each time. Done.
I'm actually, the more I think about it, the more I'm astounded that they don't do that, and the more suspicious I am that they probably do that. Like, why wouldn't you do that? You walk into the store, especially somebody like me, who I walk past the same, when I'm window shopping, I window shop past the same things 6-7 times before I buy them. It's like the 3DS. If Target had been doing facial scans on me as I walked around their store, they would know long before I bought that I wanted to buy that from them. And they would know, hey, we need to figure out how to put an ad in front of this dude for a 5% discount just today only in order to get him to pull the trigger on it. It totally would have worked on me. I'm actually really surprised that that's not a thing because it's, you know, London does it. Like, a whole city does it. Walmart can't do it. I'll bet they're piloting that in a couple of their stores. That freaks me out.
There's obviously privacy concerns are huge. People have a thing about their faces. You can look at everything else, but
we're all on camera all the time when we walk into Walmart. You look around the store, they got cameras everywhere for security reasons.
Yeah, I know. It's for security reasons. They're not storing it long term and connecting it with other data. The second they do that, there are some massive disclosures that need to happen. And like I said, we get funny about that kind of stuff.
Do they need to disclose? Oh, I don't. I think it freaked me out big time. Do they need to disclose it?
Well, think about what I'm thinking in my head is like Google Maps. When they're going around taking pictures, they got to blur everybody's face out on that.
Right.
And that's just, I think that's all part of the same thing.
But they're already taking security footage for internal use. You're already on recorded. You're already on film and you're being recorded for long-term use for security purposes.
Not long-term use. I would argue that that's not true. And I also would argue that if it is held long-term, they're blurring stuff out. The way that privacy stuff works, I know that HP goes way over the top on, like, you know, just collecting printer information. I mean, it's crazy how much information we get rid of just because, well, we can't hold on to that because this is people's information. Sure, it's collected at some point because it's like, if you're doing a video, you don't have a choice. You collect the video. But then there's some post-processing that happens, and they scrub all of that stuff. And I know that you don't believe it, but I can tell you, working for a large company in the big data group, they get rid of all that stuff. And if they don't, you have to tell everybody everything that you're doing multiple times. It's a pain. And so I'm with you, you know, sure. Possibilities would be cool. It'd be interesting. They're not going to.
I don't know, man.
I don't understand is you could.
I feel like you're walking into a public area there. Maybe I'm not thinking through this at all, but it's like, they've already got it from two different sides, right? They're keeping track of your information when they know what purchases are made on a credit card. If you ever use a loyalty card, they've got your personal information and they know more about you. But as an entity, even if it's just your credit card, they know that this person buys all these things. They've got all that data. And then they've also got the data of the security footage for, you know, and maybe they're scrubbing it at some point, but it's like, if I steal something and they want to be able to go back and look at it, they need to be able to see my face at some point to see, yeah, this was Matthew stole from Walmart. I've never done that, but, you know, as an example. So it's like that
data. And for the record, they don't look at that kind of stuff. I mean, that's why they have the greeters there. That's their theft protection. it's not the security cameras.
But they have – maybe it's not theft protection, but it's what if a murder happens in Walmart, which, let's be honest, is not beyond Walmart.
It's already happened. It happens every Thanksgiving.
Exactly. They've got Black security Friday. Cameras. Yeah, they've got security cameras in there for that purpose. And I think they've got to have your face at some point when you walk in. Maybe they don't store it long term. Maybe they scrub it pretty quickly. But it just seems like they're so close to, we know you've come in our store, we've recorded you, we've processed it, and we know everything about your credit card. Why not just put the two together real quick? I mean, just a little boop, you know, and all of a sudden we know. Yeah.
You can't. I mean,
why can't you?
Because we have privacy rules, at least in the United States.
Why is it okay for them to keep track of what I purchased based on my credit card, but it's not okay to keep track of what I purchased based on my face?
Yeah, it's all about information you freely give them and information you don't. when you're making a purchase, when you're handing them your card, you're implicitly saying, here's my credit card information. Here's my checkout information, since I'm, you know, handing you this stuff to check me out. Again, unless at some point in time when you're walking in, you're signing something that says, yeah, sure, use my picture. You're not giving them your picture. Or there's a huge sign, I guess, at the entrance. By walking in this door, you are giving us permission to hook your face with your stuff. I would shudder to think what the reaction would be to that. That would be pretty incredible. I don't know. I that's the big difference. And I know for, like, again, even with printers, there is, I don't want to say it, like, you know, we know what the printer is, I guess, and could tie that printer to the individual person based on, you know, watching purchase patterns, you know, transaction data. And there's like, it's crazy small. There's like three people within HP who in theory could put those keys together and have access to both sides of it and could make it all work. And they're like, and that's it. And that really is, again, it's like for emergency purposes, for some reason we have to put these things together to see who this person was that had this printing behavior. You go, that's it. And it's like, and they're not even supposed to. It's just, if we had to, we could. And even then, the data only sticks around for like 36 months. That's it. And then we have to flush it no matter what. And we're talking about printing data. Who cares? You know, big deal.
Yeah.
Now all of a sudden you start throwing in, you have pictures of me. You're watching me shop. Yeah, 1984, Big Brother, here we come.
But they're already watching us shop. This is
well, it's so yeah, much. But again, it's all about perception, you know. So I was thinking, like, what would be interesting is, you know, doing a heat map of the store. That would be make a lot of sense, or some sort of, I'm thinking like LIDAR or radar type thing, where it's tracking. Like, kind of, you know, again, it's anonymous at that point because they don't know who you are. They just know you're an entity walking around the store, and you can start to track patterns. And then in theory, it would then watch you go to the checkout and know when you're checking out. And so then it could retroactively look back at, you know, how did you wander around the store? What did how you ultimately buy? And then go, yep, you know, we can see he did this. And then you might find, you know, this one did come, you know, through this aisle multiple times. And, you know, you can start to put some stuff together. But
how is that at all different than facial recognition? How is it at all different?
Because you don't know who the person is.
Until they pay, and then you know exactly who the person is.
Well, you know who, you know, it's... You don't know who the person is. You just know who's what is tied to that credit card. Again, I'm actually kind of surprised that you don't get this concept. Your face, your picture, it game changes when you start getting that.
But my point is that you don't have to keep a. I guess what gets me is that it's like to me, you know, if what is the difference between saying, okay, we're going to use an algorithm that all it's going to do is it's going to say, just keep track of this person. I don't want to know who it is. You don't even need to store the data, keep the pictures. They can do it all live rendering, right? And they're basically saying, just track this person. Track the person through the store based on their face. Don't store pictures of the face. Just track the person. Now you've got this track of everywhere the person goes, where they're looking, what they're doing, until finally they pay. And then you say, this person paid with cash. This person paid with this credit card. And this is the track that they gave. You've got no stored, you know, facial recognition stuff. It's the exact same thing that you would do with LIDAR, but there's no faces recorded. Would that be okay? It's just, but it's all facial recognition. Same principle, different technology. And you got to believe that they do mapping of some sort.
The answer is probably okay. In reality, you'd have massive lashback. And I don't think you'd actually get away with it. I think if you did that, I think you'd have Congress all over you so fast, asking you all sorts of hard questions and creating all sorts of rules. It would be a joke. And you'd instantly back off from it.
Or they love it because the NSA has access to the whole backend.
I don't think so. I don't think so.
See, and one of the things that I get is that I know they do huge studies on tracking people through stores to try to optimize the stores to get you to pay the most amount of stuff. So they already exactly. Well, they already do that sort of resonance tracking through stores, like. We know that they do this. It seems so hard. I guess I get the idea of we've got all the discrete pieces of data and actually stitching it together is a big deal. It's sort of like Google. Everybody was fine with Google knowing what you watched on YouTube, what your email was, whatever. But it became a different thing when everything was tied to your Google Plus account. For whatever reason, people couldn't figure out that Google could figure it out. But just letting them tap together, that moment that they actually tied it all together in front of your face really bothered people. And I get that. And what ironically, the whole deal is now that they've actually got your holistic personality, now that they're allowing YouTube to spin off and allowing Google or Gmail to spin off and become these separate entities again, it's too late. They already know everything about you. They've already got that all tied together on the back end. They don't need you in a forward, you know, at this point, that whole Google Plus, I was actually talking to somebody about it this weekend, the whole Google Plus movement was about tying everything together because they could make intelligent guesses, but that allowed them to say, yes, now we know who everybody is from all of our different services. Now moving forward, we can more easily tie those things together on the back end discreetly without anybody knowing it if we need slash want to, which of course they need and want to. And what they were jealous of was Facebook's ability to do that all as they go. That's what they, that was the whole, let's beat Facebook. Well,
that was because people were willing them going like, here's a picture of me and it's tagged. Here. Exactly. Oh yeah, that's me. Just in case you couldn't figure it out. That's totally me.
Well, and it's funny because it's like with the whole Facebook thing, it's like the whole, and like the tagging thing, when you go in, and I took a picture on Wednesday when the Giants won the World Series, I took a picture of me and two of her cousins, and yeah, it like, I went to tag it, and I, and it zeroed on all the three faces, yeah, which that's cool. And then I clicked on the one with me, and it had my name pre-populated and like eight different people. I clicked on that. And then I went on the one with Chelsea, and it had Chelsea pre-populated. And then you just like, and okay, so the active tagging of it on the front end, the forward facing to all of my friends, yes, I had to manually go and do that. But they already did that on the back end. They knew that was a picture of Chelsea, and they'd already tied that together to her account on the back end because that's what they care about. They want to know, what am I doing with her when? They've taken the metadata from my camera, and they know where we were. Like, that's all there. They've got all that. Why wouldn't they? And that's the thing that bothers me about it. That's, I guess that's the reason I'm quote-unquote confused, because all of these different services do this already, and they already tie this together on the back end. It's such a small difference. I'm just really surprised that Walmart hasn't taken the bold step to say, with this point, we're 98% of the way there. We realize that last 2% is a big deal, but it's not a big enough deal to make a big deal about. So we won't.
Well, and it's almost like they got to take that bold Facebook step where they go, we're going to assume that cheaper prices are more important to you than your privacy.
Yep.
And they're probably right. You know, sure, it'll be a storm for a week or two, yeah, and then we'll forget about it and just keep shopping. Because then all of a sudden you'll realize these benefits that come with it.
You know, like the fact that I get a 5% discount on...
Which I'm like, I don't understand why... I mean, the way you get around it is Safeway style. You know, and I've said multiple times, I think the way Safeway does it is brilliant. You know, you get a discount if you give us your number. You don't give us your number, you don't get a discount. Done. You know, and so now you have an incentive. And do you use mom and dad's number?
All the time.
Yeah, me too.
Relentlessly.
And I'm sure they hate us.
I'm pretty much the only one that uses the gas discounts. So I'm big fan that we all use mom and dad's number.
Yeah, yeah. I use it too. Oh, dude, I got like a 30-cent one the other day. And I was like, yeah, fill that bad boy up. Yeah. Especially knowing that... you know, our dad doesn't like to go to Safeway for whatever reason. He likes Rotten Robbie's, and our mom, you know, now that she's on the company card, she doesn't care.
Yeah,
and, yeah, which is awesome. But so anyways,
call me when a dollar discount's about to expire. You need to go and get gas like now. Perfect, because I'm out.
Yeah. Anyways, I was gonna say. But, you know, I like the way that they do it, where it's like, dude, just put in your number, give us your card, whatever. You get that. We'll give you a discount for our stuff. And then, you know, and then it's like on top of that, you know, and Costco gets a similar deal, right? Because they require you to have your Costco card, membership card. And so it's kind of like solves that problem, right? They're going to be ones who are instantly like, yeah, we'll move over. We don't care about your payment type. Because we've already tagged, you know, who you are. But I don't see why they don't, you know, A, like you were talking about, you know, if we can, you know, track, they should actually track your movements within the store. They should even take it a step further where they've got some sort of, you know, I don't know, maybe NFC, something where they can actually, like, they'll know if a package gets picked up and moved and put into your basket. So they can be tracking your in-store shopping habits. And then I would love to see it if they were super smart, where it was like when you signed up, you know, they have like some sort of online portal where you can complete your profile. You can sync it to Facebook and, you know, some other services. And then they can sit there and say, all right, now we've got your face. We know who you are. And then sure, take it that next step and go, yeah, this is going to be a storm and a half, but why not? You know, we're just going to take a quick little snapshot of your face when you walk in, and then we'll track you the rest of the way through the store because we'll know who you are. And, you know, I'm still trying to figure out, like, what's the, like, how do you take advantage of that? You know, I mean, because I get exactly what Target was doing, where they're looking at your baskets of goods and they're trying to predict, you know, what kind of life event you have going around what you're purchasing. And then based on that, they can send you ads, which then drive you to the store. Yeah, you know, a fantastic story. And one that doesn't require to track someone throughout the store. Other than, like you were talking about, can you find stuff where people are looking at a product and they haven't, they keep coming back to it once or twice. And then you can say, hey, we saw you were looking at this, thought you were interested. Here's a discount to go get it now.
Yeah.
You know, I could definitely see that as useful. You know, or what if they did it where it was like, how mean would this be? Where they saw that you were looking at the Nintendo DS and they're like, hey, here's a discount on a couple games.
Yeah, that's exactly my point. Like, I mean, I would have.
Now they got you not just to buy the unit, but you just went and bought two games while you were at it, which is totally like the Amazon. Oh, spend $35, get free shipping, no problem.
Yep, I would have pulled the trigger so much faster, and they would not have had to give me much of a discount at all, like really and truly. And I sit there and I can't believe that it's not done more often. It, you know,
which I guess for that you don't have to actually have the facial recognition, because you would just know, hey, this person came and looked at this. And, you know, you could do it all after the fact. You wouldn't have to have it the instant you walk into the store. And then,
yeah, and I feel like the real trick here is going to be somebody's going to have to go so far over the line that it's going to be ridiculous. They're going to have to go to the full on. We want to know we want to know your mother's maiden name and social security number. When they first, like, we're going to do facial tracking. We're going to get your medical history. We're going to get your mom's maiden name. We're going to get your social security number. We're going to get your bank accounts. We're going to get everything. That way, when everybody freaks out, they can go, okay, you're totally right. That was a bad idea. All we're going to do is facial recognition tracking. We're going to let all the rest of it go. Don't worry about it. You know, and maybe Walmart feels but Walmart's like the perfect one to do that sort of a thing, because they are, like, people just go because they're cheap. That's why we go to Walmart, because they're the most affordable, you know?
Now, their big problem is that because of the way their business model works, they don't have some sort of loyalty program unless you use a Walmart card.
Right.
They are wholly dependent on you using consistent cards in order to purchase. You know, that's the whole part of the everyday low price guarantee. They're like, you don't have to have a special card or be a part of a membership or something. So they struggle with that side of tying people to it. And that's one of the reasons, too, why they're big into this currency, because it gives them a way to embed a loyalty card within your payment system, essentially. Yeah,
and the facial recognition takes care of the cash dilemma. Because now we know what you bought, even if you pay with cash.
Now you're just
not safe. You know, and I'm just, it's just really surprising to me that nobody's taken that step publicly.
People get weird about their faces and pictures of them. And that's why everyone shied away from it. And to be honest, you haven't had to, you know, there's enough information to learn and enough customers to go after that you're like, yeah, no big deal. We can pass on that. We might be getting to a point now where, like, okay, we've conquered the current space. We're ready to move on to the next level of understanding and insights. That could be possible.
Not to mention the fact that there's probably a big capital cost. I'm sure, you know, facial recognition's easy if you've got a server farm. How many server farms does Walmart have? You know, I got to believe to them there is a...
Well, there was a point in time where the only organization that had a larger server farm than Walmart was the Pentagon. I don't think that's true anymore with the advent of the cloud. I'm pretty sure Google beats everybody, or Amazon, one of those two.
Yeah, Amazon and Facebook are the number one and number two buyers of penny or of Intel chips. So,
well, that's only because Google makes their own. They don't have to buy any from anybody. But
that's my point. They've got giant server farms, and Google, Amazon, and Walmart and Facebook. But yeah, I mean, your point's valid. Walmart still has huge server farms. They've got the computational ability to do it. Which just brings me more to the point of I'm just really surprised they don't. I mean, I try not to be a total conspiracy theorist. I'm surprised. I would be.
They're
I
not. Guess, because they're the biggest, you don't want to get caught in that kind of stuff because you would get in massive, massive trouble. And it's just not worth it. Especially when they don't have a clear path of, like, here's exactly what we can do with this.
Do you think they've asked the question to the extent of, let's run an experiment? Maybe not do it with real people and real data, but at least tried it out in, like, a controlled manner.
Probably.
Where they
could, sure.
You know. Okay.
Well, I remember they were playing with the whole RFID concept a while where you would, they had it on the basket.
Yeah.
And then you'd walk in and they would know, you know, they'd encode it to you. And then when you picked up an item and put it in the basket, they could technically charge you for it right then and there. You know, so they've played around with that. You know, they're constantly experimenting and trying stuff. They've at least asked the question and talked about it as an executive team.
I'm going to say it because I could see you saying, let's start a pilot program of a number of people that will actively give consent, employees or whatever, people that and just see. What information can we gather? How close are we? What capital investments would we need to make?
Yeah.
Is it worth it? You know, ask that question.
Now, how does something like iBeacons play into all of that?
Right? You know, at this point, all of our phones
are constantly... I feel like that's also related to it.
Yeah. At this point, all of our phones are constantly, you know, all iPhones are constantly broadcasting a unique Bluetooth, you know, thing, or at least it's really easy to trigger it to do that. I mean, it's designed to be receiving and to send out a, you know, contact information all the time. My phone gives off Bluetooth or iBeacon notifications all the time because I have an app that turned my iPad into a Bluetooth or into an iBeacon. So like, it's just a null beacon. It's not giving off any particular information, but my iPhone constantly reacts to it when, you know, and it gives a little notification on the lock screen of, oh, by the way, there's an iBeacon near you. I know. Go ahead.
Yeah. I'm with you. It does feel like this landscape is going to change and be shaken up. Of course, it's also felt that way for a few years and it just hasn't happened. Will Apple Pay be the catalyst that kind of forces some hands and makes people, companies, organizations, however you want to think about it, you know, try some new stuff? Because, you know, dude, as long as you know what I mean? You're like, sure, your payment is now more safe and secure, so you feel free to give up some other information instead. Right. Yeah. You know, this could be a catalyst. It may not be. I don't know. I've also noticed organizations tend to have groupthink and we'll focus on that one hot topic area. Yeah. So it could just be on the payment platform more for a little while. I could see that too, which would be kind of sad, but, yeah, it's interesting space. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
As long as currency keeps getting hacked and as a target, they won't be a part of the conversation.
I don't know. Yeah. That's, yeah.
But yeah,
that actually turned into a much better conversation than I kind of was predicting it would.
Yeah, you know, it helps when we disagree with something, I think.
It's true.
And we both know just enough that we think we can talk eloquently about it.
Right.
That also helps.
No, this has to be how it is. No, it can't be that way. It has to be this other way.
Yeah, that always helps. All right, so... moving right along here, I need to reiterate here that I work for Hewlett-Packard. However, this is really important, I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions. And so what that means is everything you're about to hear is not me talking the company line. It is solely my opinions, my criticisms, and so take it as that. That's critically important that you do. So, having said that, HP made an announcement.
Now I've got to internally guess. Are you going to criticize it or are you going to talk about it being awesome? Because that's the real question coming from here.
The answer is yes. actually, because HP announced two things.
Hmm.
And one of which I really liked, and one of which I was like, eh. Yeah, and I'm actually, it turns out I'm like opposite of the rest of the tech industry, which is
weird. Sorry.
Which maybe that does point out my bias. You watching a video? So it was at 6:30 in the morning on Wednesday. HP had an announcement. They did it in New York for some reason. I don't know why. And I watched it because I got the invite. And I was like, oh, cool. HP's announcing something. I didn't know what it was. And then I was like, I'm pretty sure one of them is a 3D printer, and we'll see what the other one is. And so they started off the presentation with my soon-to-be new CEO, Dion Wessler. He said there are three different legs, if you will, within HP and its development cycle, I guess. He goes, leg number one is the core business. These are things that we are currently doing right now. Printers, you know, inkjet printers, laserjet printers, PCs. He's like, that's our core business, and we're going to keep focusing, and we're going to make money on that, blah, blah, blah. He goes, the next wave is wave two, which is something that you can tell is at the precipice of, you know, of taking off, and there's a bunch of focus on them. He goes, wearables is an example of that.
Mm.
You know, it's like, so there's an opportunity there to add a new product, which, you know, which HP has done and actually released their new watch this week or pre-released it or something. They did more than just renders. They actually showed off an actual working watch. Which is cool. And then, they go, so that's kind of that wave two. And then they say, and then there's wave three, which is really this, like, this leapfrog in what's going on. It's a jump beyond what everyone else is doing. I think of like the Wii as being that example, you know, just kind of like everyone was headed in one direction and they went, and we're going to take it just that much further of a step. But imagine a Wii with like good graphics, essentially. You know, and so that was kind of what they said. And he goes, today we're going to focus on wave two and wave three.
Nice.
And,
that's
and again, I thought they got it opposite, but, you know, we'll go with it. So he goes, so wave two. Wave two. HP announced their new 3D multi-jet fusion printer.
Woo!
What? So now we've got inkjet, laserjet, and multi-jet fusion. Boom.
All right.
So so this is the one it actually exceeded my expectations, and I thought it was genuinely cool. Okay?
Nice.
And sorry, HP, it takes a lot for me to get it genuinely excited about something that HP does. There's like maybe two or three products in the last 5 years where I'm like, this is actually kind of cool. I worked on one of them, and you know, so here's what this thing does. It's a 3D printer. I thought they did a really good job of saying, like, okay, here's what's out there, and here's how we're better. Okay, they were like, number one issue that people have, they're like, speed. Okay, these things are slow as molasses. They take forever.
That is true.
They go, we solved it. Because we utilized our current inkjet technology, and right now what happens is with an inkjet, our latest inkjet printers, these things that print like 70 pages per minute, we're talking fast, okay?
That is pretty fast.
They've got a big bar across with, you know, hundreds of thousands of little nozzles in them. And so the way printers used to work is the little thing, you know, the cheap ones, they move back and forth. They go, so when it doesn't, the bar just stands still and then the page moves underneath it, and it just, however fast you can move the page is how fast we can print this thing. It's kind of how it works. And if anything, they have to start worrying about overspray because it's spraying so much so fast. And so they went, this uses that same print bar, except now we're moving the print bar back and forth at the speed at which we normally do it for an inkjet printer. Because you imagine this big bar, it's just like boom, 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 just shooting back and forth on it. And they go, and so we're able to secrete out, you know, essentially inkjet print the material that it is that they're printing. They go, and so we can do it all in one big pass, really fast, and then build up the layers like they do, like, normally. And then what'll happen is the inkjet bar moves, and then they have the fuse bar move, and then it kind of, you know, they kind of jump back and forth, and it just kind of goes. They're like, as a result, it's 10 times faster than anything
else. That is dramatically faster.
Dramatically faster. And so they were talking about, like, you know, if there was this one part, and they said, we tried it on the leading 3D printer, and to print like 1,000 of them took, it was like 30 hours or something. They're like, yeah, it took three on ours. And they're like, so you can do like actual runs. So now this is like, they are focusing on the manufacturing space. Like, this is where we see a big opportunity, and eventually they'll make them smaller and move it into the consumer line. But they're thinking manufacturing. They said the other thing that they did was, they said, you may have noticed, but we're pretty accurate with our printers. We know how to render an accurate picture at a very small level. The way HP measures things, you know, in microns, if you will.
Right.
They said the leading printer can print somewhere, you know, the printing range is somewhere between like 400 to maybe 100 microns.
Say 3 mils is kind of the which is 300 microns. It's kind of your standard.
Yeah. So HP is at 21. Again, we're in the 10x improvement space there. They said it was very interesting. They decided they wanted to print one of the printer's parts, and they tried it on one of the other manufacturers' printers, and they go, and it just wouldn't work. We couldn't be precise enough. Said, and then we printed off the printer's part using an already existing printer, and like, and sure enough, we were able to get it accurate enough that it worked. And it was kind of funny, the Dion Wessler came back online, and he goes, you know, I kind of see a problem with our business model. He goes, we're going to sell one of these. And then you just make them yourself, which is kind of fun. And then, so again, it's super fast, super accurate is kind of their big hallmark stuff.
Yeah.
They also said, which I thought this was interesting. They go, so, we know how to do pigments and colors. So you'll be able to print in colors.
Which is not new, but, you know, it's different.
Yeah, and I mean, and again, it's like, you get the full color range, you know, as, you know, like you're printing a page. You can do that, which is cool. They also can change the elasticity of the material, which I thought was fascinating.
Now, that is actually getting, because one of the big questions I've always had is, you know, the big question to me in 3D printers, beyond speed, color, all of those things, when you actually start to get interesting is when you talk about what material you're building it out of and what are its material properties. Like, the earliest ones were additive. They were these, like, polycarbonate balls that you were basically gluing together layer by layer, and that was giving you these really, really brittle parts. And then you've got stuff like the maker bots that are doing additive, like, and... That all of a sudden I have an echo.
All right,
you know, thank you. And like, as you're doing these additive steps, you're getting these parts that are made out of like some sort of a continuous plastic, which are more flexible. When I went to the the semiconductor show in San Francisco earlier this year, we saw one that was able to do three. You know, it was like it had three different materials that it could actually print out in an additive way, and depending on what portion they did it on, it would give you all these different flexibilities and hardnesses, and that was like, whoa, this is super cool, because you could, you know, print out different hardnesses, and that's a big step. You know, unless you're printing out metal, giving different elasticities is a big deal, so I'm glad
that they can also incorporate metal into this, apparently.
Okay.
I don't understand how it works, but... But yeah, so that was part of it. They can also do different textures, which I thought was interesting.
That is interesting. Well, when you get down to that accurate, you know,
yeah,
you can.
And then the last thing they said, again, leveraging existing technology, they said not only can we make the printers less expensive than what's currently out there, and again, think manufacturing level ones, not necessarily MakerBot.
Yeah.
Because this thing's big. Yeah. it goes up to... You know, it's what, 3.5-4 feet tall. It's not a small printer. And then they were saying not only will the actual hardware printer itself be cheaper, but the supplies to actually print them off as well will be cheaper. So they were like, so we figured out how to do it faster with higher quality at a cheaper price. Kind of the trifecta of awesome. I don't know how big the ultimate design can be. I don't know if it's stuck in that like 5x5 inch space or if they can go up to like 12 inches.
I'm sure it's 12 inch.
It looked like it was 12 inch from the pictures, but
I would be really surprised if it were smaller than 12 inch on something like this.
Yeah. So, it was pretty cool. And like I said, I was genuinely excited about it. They were like, we think we're going to revolutionize manufacturing with this. And I was like, if you deliver on that, yeah, I would agree with you.
It's a pretty impressive piece of hardware. I mean, like, I'll hand it to them. I mean, at this point, most of the really impressive things that, you know, oh, we can do color. Oh, we can do different materials. Oh, we can do metal. Oh, we can do this. Oh, we can do the, you know, somebody has figured out how to do it. Now it's figuring out how to do it in a way that, you know, can justify small manufacturing companies buying them. And you're really getting into the ballpark of being able to do that, HP. I mean, yep. If you're not there, you're real close. You know, and I say that as a company that, you know, working for a company that regularly looks into this sort of thing. And the best part about it is, you know, they've got, you know, HP is going to leverage their own IP to do the cool stuff. But the basics of what they're doing is now open IP. So they don't even have to, you know, you're not paying development costs to somebody who figured out how to do this, you know, the basics of it 15 years ago. You know, it's
right. Yeah, it's cool.
Very cool.
Like I said, and so they were talking about this overall concept of blended reality was kind of the theme of the show, of the announcement. And so that was the output of 3D. And then they said, and now we want to talk about the third wave of innovation, something that's beyond where everyone else is thinking, and it's amazing sauce. And they're like, we're talking about the input side of 3D. And so HP announced Sprout. Which I know who that executive is, and he is who announced it. He is amazing at superlatives and building stuff up much bigger than they actually should be. And he did it again. Woohoo! It was just like, he just started down that track, and I went, this is classic him.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I was like, it's... So what it is, it's picture an iMac. Because okay, that's what it looks like, okay?
I'm going to picture an Xbox One, but okay.
Okay.
All right.
Picture an Xbox One that looks like an iMac. All
right.
And then from the iMac, on top of it, pops out a...
A Kinect?
No, it's not a... Well, it is a Kinect, but imagine a Kinect turns sideways.
Okay.
Okay? So, you know, it's like a... So it's like as if the bar came out. I'm imagining like if you had like a light above your computer screen kind of coming out, it might be like that.
Okay.
So you got your iMac with your Kinect turned sideways on top of it. Now on your table, imagine you have a cutting board, like a plastic cutting board. Okay?
Okay.
About that size. That's Sprout. Okay.
All right.
And so so what you have this this iMac thing, it's your display, it's a touch screen, it runs Windows 8 on it.
Mm-hmm.
This sideways Kinect has some 3D cameras in it, so it can scanner, I think is the right way to say it. So you could set an object down on this mat and then it will take a scan of it and scan it. It also has a projector on it, so it will project images down onto said mat. And then the mat itself has a 20 finger touch sensitivity thingamajigger.
That's a lot of fingers.
So in theory, it could project down like a keyboard and you could type on it, or it could project down a surface and you could take a pen or your finger and you could draw on the mat and it will then, you know, impose what you just drew with the projector on that mat. You could also take an object, say like this microphone, and set it down on top of it, hit a scan button or tell it or somehow scan it, and then you can remove the microphone and the picture of it will, you know, stay in place, a 2D rendering of this 3D object, and then you could move it back and forth, you could put it into a PowerPoint, you could draw pictures around it, you could then slide it up to the touch screen and have it there. And that's essentially what Sprout is. So it's good for, it was kind of funny, at one time they were like, this is great for making PowerPoint presentations because it's so intuitive and, you know, you really feel like you're making it. I'm like, yeah, not the kind I make, but that's cool. And then they showed a bunch of artists using it and stuff. It was kind of funny. Every single screen they showed of it, the workstation was very dirty and crafty. And it was very, like, touchy-feely, which is fine. It's kind of what they're going for. But they were like, this is Wave 3 Revolution. We are leapfrogging everybody and going in a totally different direction than whatever thought. We are years ahead of the competition. And I was like, the 3D printer was more like that. This is not Wave 3.
I'll tell you what. They're not wrong. That is definitely where it is heading. That is just not the implementation that is going to take root.
Right? So I was like, I kind of feel like you can already hook your iPad up to your iMac and you get... to me, I was like, A, projector, really? Really? Are we in like 1995 and we need projectors for this kind of stuff? Have we not invented touchscreens and tablets? I'm kind of like, guys, this is an obvious one.
That was a cost thing. That was absolutely a cost thing.
Yeah. Well, you know what? It's a lame thing.
Yeah.
I'm kind of like, they should have just I come out with a big HP tablet and go, hey, it connects to it. Done.
Just assume people already have their computer and they already have Windows 8 and come out with a tablet and a cool 3D camera thing. I mean, that's, you know.
Right?
Or heck, come out with, you know, tell them to buy a Kinect and have it attached to Windows 8. I mean, that's my problem. Is it's like, yeah, you're absolutely right, HP. That is totally the direction we're going. And you are the first person, you are the first ones to sell a complete system with all of the different components that everybody...
For $1,900, by the way.
Yeah, like you totally get to be claimed to be the first ones to do this. And as normal, it's stupid. it's a really bad implementation of what you're trying to get across. And it's funny, a couple of other articles that I read, it was like, it's not bad. It works pretty well, except it requires developers and third-party support, and you're never going to get a big enough market to get third-party support, period. It's just not going to happen. And so it's dead in the water from that perspective. I was like, okay. But let's take like a further step back. Like, full on, this is not – the reason why it's not going to get a bunch of adoption isn't because it's expensive. It's because it's a bad implementation. It just isn't a good way to do it. Because number one, it requires a complete holistic workstation. It's not something that's, you know, I kind of get where they're coming from. It's sort of like the whole Kinect thing or the whole Xbox One solution of, we're going to give you the machine and the scanner and the controller, and we're going to give you all the different parts. And this is one of my big arguments with the Oculus Rift, is that the Oculus Rift alone is just a screen. You need the rest of the equipment to be able to work with it. So unless there's a whole package, it's not going to work. But the thing with the Oculus Rift is, you can bundle that with other things, and third parties can get into it, and you kind of get this holistic solution. But ultimately, that's the biggest problem with it, is that you're talking about taking a 2D or a 3D object and rendering it into a 2D space. Now, granted, it's cool that you can make it in 3D, and I like the idea of being able to have like a 3D object that you project the distorted image onto it, so that now you can have a mask, and then you can project different distorted images that will actually make so it looks like it's right on the mask. That's a cool idea. There's other companies that are doing that with like furniture and stuff to sort of give you like they're it's cool. It's definitely cool. But nobody's implemented it in a way that people are actually going to use and want, and it's going to be a real workflow thing. Not to mention the fact that you can achieve that with two cameras and any projector. Any two cameras and any two projectors. You could do that exact thing, which means you can do it for cheaper because you can leverage the infrastructure that's already there. But I think the fact that the Oculus Rift is going to actually give you the 3D experience. You know, the VR is so going to leapfrog that. That's the biggest problem, is that they're actually, because they're using the projector onto it, and they're building this platform without they're building an augmented reality platform is what they're doing. And that's cool. It's just so clearly not what people want. There are those solutions already exist, and nobody's turned it into a real product because the individual components don't sell. Nobody uses them. Nobody can figure out how to use a projector because the moment you get in front of a projector, you've now blocked the image and you've ruined the effect. Whereas what I really want, what I'm desperate for, is to be able to see behind my hands, to put my hands in front of my face and have the screen fill it in as though it's actually there and move it around in 3D.
Yes.
And understand my hand spatially and insert the object where it's supposed to be, which means Yep. You need a video of my hands. And the fact that you can't do that, that you're not going to project, I mean, it's just, I don't know.
They can do it on a 2D, right? I mean, you can pinch the zoom, you can move stuff with your hands. So they've got that. I was just kind of like, they started off with the premise of 3D input, and I went, yeah, but it makes it 2D. What I wanted to be able to do was scan in my microphone and then print it off in 3D. That was what you set me up for.
Yeah, you've actually made it worse. You've actually gone backwards. You've taken what is 3D. I've already got, it's like, to me, what's cool is the idea to take a 2D image on my screen. I make a 3D model. It's a 2D image on my screen. I want to be able to print it out and handle it in 3D. I don't want to go backwards. Like, that's not what I want. I want a whole 3D object that I can interact with in real time. And There's two ways to do that. One is to take a complete scan of it, throw it back into 3D software, and then be able to do it on, on a 2D image type experience, or to do it in VR in real time. And I get where they were going, and I feel like they just took a weird left turn somewhere. Like, guys, we were going to Vegas. How'd you end up in Arizona? I don't get it. Like, yeah, that's the right general direction, but it's totally the wrong place. I don't know.
I'm totally with you. Totally with you there. I got done and went, disappointing.
Yeah.
3D printer, awesome. I don't think it's going to get talked about as much because it's obviously not consumer space yet. Yeah, I was like, this executive, he is amazing at hyping up that kind of stuff and giving it legs. And it's kind of like, man, I wish he could actually develop something cool.
He's like Steve Jobs without the iPhone is what you're saying.
Yes, yes, he is. Well, it was funny, even in his presentation, he goes, if you wanted to print something 3D, like I've got this Michael Bastian watch right here that I might want to do in 3D. Which is the designer of HP's new smartwatch.
Yeah.
And, which are like, nice plug, a little cross promo there. Excellent. That's who he is. I don't have a ton of respect for that executive, but that's just me. I've got internal stories of things that he's done where you're just like, cool.
Well, now that you've wet our whistle for the stories, I'm sure you're not going to deliver because
no, I'm not.
Company. That was awesome. Trouble. Thank you.
I want to know. Yeah, we can. I think I've told you it actually.
Okay.
But speaking of Vegas, it was while I was there. Mm. For HP stuff. So, Sprout. It's one of those where HP has looked into doing like a printer for printing off crafts and aiding people in that. and time again, HP's found that the market just isn't that big.
Yeah.
It's not worth sinking in that much time and energy to create a craft, you know, printer for crafting. And it's kind of like, but we decided to make a PC for crafting. And yeah, we will sell hundreds of them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Hundreds.
Well, we'll probably sell thousands.
Worldwide?
In a company that, you know, counts things by the millions.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we'll sit there and go, yeah, we sold 55,000 of them. Woo. Done. Yeah. You know. Whereas I actually genuinely think, like, they'll sell a couple million of those 3D printers, and
It's the foundations of I feel a little comfortable being even meaner about printing on paper, because there's actually a roadmap now, you know, for there's a future to the printing division of HP, because that's a big deal. I mean, that's like they like you said, that is a major improvement. And it's the sort of thing that great engineers with a lot of experience in that specific thing can bring their expertise and leverage a lot of really well-developed technology. And they can just, you know, mollywomp on the little guys that, you know, the young upstarts and just say, yeah. No, you're not going to take over this market. We are. And, you know, which is why you patent the heck out of any new innovation, because you're not going to beat HP. You want to get paid by HP. that's the goal. It's very cool. The printing that actually is, and it's funny, like you said, nobody talks about it. I haven't even heard about it, and I pay attention to this stuff obviously obsessively. I'd paid attention enough to the Sprout to go like, okay, I'm not even going to add an article because I don't think it's worth mentioning.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, the printer, if I had caught wind of the printer, I definitely would have been big on that one too. That's big. That actually is a big deal. But speaking of devices that should have never taken off but did and are going to – actually, this is awesome.
I don't know which one you're going to read based off of that intro.
I know, right? I was going to jump to Amazon. I think Amazon's going to do what HP should do with Sprout, but they're not going to. Very last article. I'm going to jump around a bit. The Fire Phone, they're going to do exactly what I said they would do, which was the phone's going to sell terribly. I think it sold a lot worse than they were expecting. It sold considerably worse, but
bad enough that you can't hide it and be like, oh, you know, it's, you know, we sold some.
They acknowledged it, so it was it's bad. But what I'm glad to see is they're going to do what I sort of said that they should do the day it was announced, which is it's not going to sell well. It's a Gen 1 product, but it has some truly novel innovations that I think have some ground. You know, they've got somewhere to go with it. And I think that if they really keep pushing it and developing it and turn it into a stable platform, it'll allow third parties to come in and say, we're going to do something cool. I know it keeps getting called, like, everybody complains about it being a gimmick. And my gut is it's not. My gut is that and one of the reasons why is because, Lollipop, one of the big innovations in Lollipop in like they're trying to make Android secure, because, you know, the first Android phone that got the cool security clearance from the government was the Samsung with Knox software. Yeah. And then, like we said, next day got outed as being completely insecure. Well, Google holistically is trying to change that, because that's huge if they can get into government contracts like that. So one of the big innovations they've done with Lollipop is that they're trying to make it more secure. And if you've ever used an Android phone, when you first start it up, there's a couple of things you can do. Like, you can have, you know, you can have like a pattern that you draw, or you can have like a tap pattern that you tap. You know, iOS has got the thumbprint and the PIN number. Well, Android's got like five different things, different ways that you can unlock a phone. But one of them is a facial recognition thing. And,
right.
Which is basically what the Fire Phone is doing, just like to an even greater degree. And then what's really cool about it is that, and now they actually like regularly take images and reprocess your picture. Because what they were finding is that you could just take a picture of the person you were trying to unlock the phone from.
Nice.
And then it would unlock the phone, and then you could be in the phone. Well, now the phone actually needs to see you continuously, or it'll lock you out. They've also got cool innovations where they're doing stuff with wearables, but that's not the point. My point is that whole idea of being able to watch somebody's face and be aware of what the face is doing and what's going on all the time with the face is a direction that Android in general is moving. And Amazon actually took a couple of steps forward and went even farther with it. Now, how they implemented it was with a couple of gimmicks, but the foundational technology that they're building and they're trying to get going is something that the entire Android platform is moving towards. And I sit there and I go, okay, you went too far too fast and you stumbled. I get it, but don't give up. There's something there, and I think there really is something there. And I think they're going to prove it in a couple of years. And the phone's going to slowly and methodically start to make sales. It's going to get enough of a platform where a third-party developer is going to come in and say, you're the only device we can do this on, and we want to do it. And so they're going to they're going to have to get a killer app that sells devices. And it's going to be a niche killer app that sells it to a niche, but it's the only platform that you can get it on. It's the platform that everybody's going to go to. I don't know exactly what that looks like, or trust me, I'd be building it. But I think that's where it goes. And, Sprout, and the reason why this is, leverageable is because HP and Sprout, I think that's what they would need to do, is to say, we don't really know. This is all kind of a gimmick at this point, but we need to really push the development on this thing and just kind of stick it out through the bad sales. My gut is HP's not going to do that with Sprout. whereas
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
It's wave three, okay?
Right. All right.
It's way ahead of time. We just don't get it yet.
Exactly. Whereas Bezos has got the stomach and the tenacity and some would argue
stubbornness,
yeah, pride? Stubbornness, pride. What's those are good words to fall on that sword, to say no, it's a good idea and stick it through. Hubris was the word I was looking for. He's got he's got the tenacity and hubris to stick with it. And if it's a truly a good idea, it's tenacity. If it's as bad an idea as the first one looked, it's hubris. But whichever way you look at it, he's going for it, you know. And I don't know. I like it. I'm excited about it. Obviously, I haven't moved my personal opinion on it much.
I have given it no thought, other than to look at the sales and go, not totally surprised.
Fair enough.
On that one.
I'm playing the long game on my predictions here, so I'll occasionally bring it up every time something happens that supports my prediction, and I'll ignore it every time something happens that
works
doesn't support my prediction, as I usually do.
It's kind of one of those where, as long as Amazon was still making money, you're kind of like, yeah, whatever, have fun, guys. They lost money, but obviously they're not going anywhere.
Yeah,
but if they keep doing that, I think people start to ask a lot of questions.
Yeah, they're gonna.
I still think their biggest problem, though, is like you just said earlier, where it was like they're gonna come up with a good idea and the other two will copy them.
Yeah,
it was an article I did, but I did not highlight it, so I'll cheat and just mention it real quick. Google came out with a Google Fit, which is essentially health kit.
Yeah,
or the health app for iPhone, where it just aggregates all your health data from other apps and the sensors on the phone. And, it was kind of like, yeah, Google saw what Apple did was a good idea. Just like when Apple sees Google do something that's a good idea, they both take them. And if Amazon does something that they think is a good idea,
yeah, the moment there's...
Ask Microsoft about that in their flat...
Yeah, design. Yeah.
Their flat design.
Yeah, right? Jeez. You really... Yeah.
Well, it does look good. Thank you.
Yeah. You know what? That does look nice, Microsoft.
Yeah. We appreciate you doing the R&D on that one for us. It really saved us a lot of time and money.
Yeah. Gave us a good sense of where to go.
Yeah. Yeah. And now we've learned from your mistakes and we'll change some things. And yeah.
Did you have somewhere to go from there? Because I did.
I don't have anywhere to go.
Say, speaking of people doing their R&D for you, we had a bit of a launch of wearables this week. I mean, it was like everybody jumped in like full on. The Apple Watch has been announced, so now everybody else is coming out with their different version. Microsoft made their announcement of their smartwatch health band thing. It's kind of health band, kind of it's more than a health band, but less than a smartwatch, and it costs 200 bones. It can do certain types of updates, like directly to the screen. Like it can do stock trades. It can do it can do Twitter stuff.
That's actually useful. That's more useful than a stock trade.
Yeah, right. But it also does steps, and it does heart monitoring. I think it does instantaneous heart monitoring, which still falls far short of what I have always wanted. And
what does that do?
Just continuous
advanced
continuous heart monitoring. I want to be able to get a scale over the day. I don't want to know what it is in the instant, but. Seems that
I gotcha.
But Apple and Basic have been able to figure out how to do that, so whatever. Has built-in GPS for run tracking. Nice. It's got it does indeed work at Starbucks and comes with a $5 Starbucks gift card. Very nice. This is a big deal. Works with Windows Phone 8.1, obviously. iOS 7 and 8. Nice. Android 4.3 and 4.4. It's sweat resistant, but not waterproof. Which, by the way, my Fitbit is totally waterproof, which is cool. I didn't actually know that before I jumped into the water on the Tough Mudder last weekend, but it still works, so I'm feeling good about it. So I don't know. It's a cool little device. Kind of early reviews are that it's better than most health. If you're looking at $200 health trackers, it's the best $200 health tracker in the market right now.
Interesting.
It is not the best smartwatch,
right?
Even within a stone's throw.
Which clearly there are two different camps on that, right?
Yeah.
There's the we want to pack in as many features and make this thing as smart as we possibly can. Track.
Yes.
And then there's the. We want to stick true to, maybe there's three. There's a health track, right, where we're focusing on primarily health with maybe a couple other frills in there. And then the more streamlined, we want this thing to last a while. We maybe want it to look cool. We just want to give you the basics notifications, and keep the price reasonable. It always seems to be. It's kind of like, it's this weird, like, it doesn't feel like it's a market yet, but yet it's already like splitting fragmenting is not the right word, but segmented, I guess. I don't know. It already has this feeling of maturing, and it's like, has it even started yet?
I think
it's like waiting for it to start.
I think it's because it's really is a couple of different markets at this point, and I think what you're seeing is, I don't even know what you're seeing. I don't even know. Yeah, because it's weird. Because it's like, I definitely feel like my initial reaction is the Moto 360 is in the same ballpark as what Apple has shown the Apple Watch is capable of. It's not like when the iPhone came out compared to everything else, where there wasn't anything in the same league for 3 years. At least the Moto 360 is in the same league.
Right.
And, which is a distinct and different league from the Fitbit Flex, which is what I have, which is just pedometer, period. Just a health tracker, which is different from the
Pebble.
from the Pebble, and the HP's not ugly smartwatch.
Yeah.
As you mentioned,
which I would say is just like the Pebble.
Yeah, exactly. It's very much like the Pebble. It actually looks very cool. I mean, I'm getting an Apple Watch, but you know, if it didn't exist and I had to get a, you know, well, I'd get a Moto 360. I mean, it's just I want a smartwatch. I don't want, you know, like, I want a
full-blown
screen. But it's a cool implementation. I think
this totally reminds me of that story that I just love to tell, and I'll tell it again anyways because I love to tell it, of when HP was doing their research on their laptops and trying to decide what they should do for their next laptop innovation. And having, you know, polled all their customers, the customers were like, well, we want something that has a long battery life and is really light and really portable. They're like, those are the three things that are most important to us. And so the engineers worked really hard to figure out how to make them, portable, thin, light, and, you know, with a long battery life. And so they did things like remove the speakers from them, or make it so that the, you'll love this, the floppy drive and CD drive were interchangeable.
Nice.
And, they would reduce the amount of storage space and, you know, things like that. And then they made that. And so then, thankfully, HP was smart enough that they decided to do some customer, you know, focus groups. And, so they'd show them to them and they'd be like, well, where's the speaker on it? What if I want to listen to music? They're like, oh, well, you just plug in your headphones. It has a headphone jack. Like, yeah, but what if I want music loud? and they were like, well, you can't. It doesn't work. They're like, oh, okay. Then they were like, well, what if I want to have a CD and a floppy disk at the same time? What would I do? Like, well, you couldn't. You just would use one or the other. Research has shown that, you know, you really only do one at a time, so we just make them interchangeable. And they're like, well, what if, like, okay, let's say that I'm traveling and I have something on a floppy disk and then I want to listen to some music, apparently not on the speaker, but in my headphones. Can I listen to music while accessing stuff on my floppy disk? They're like, no, you cannot. But you could take your floppy, whatever's on your floppy disk, copy it to your desktop, and then switch out the little module. You remember our mom had this?
Yeah.
On like her Toshiba laptop back in the day. Like, and then you could switch out the module, which is sitting in your bag because you brought it with you on like the airplane. And then you could listen to your music. And they got all the way through this, and it got to the point where people were like, well, they're like, well, I want them both. Like, well, it's going to make it thicker and heavier, and the battery won't last as long. They're like, okay, I'd rather have them both.
Yeah.
And throw in a set of speakers while you're at it. And so you actually watched this happen in the industry where laptops started out as very small. And then in order to keep them small, they were very modular and compartmentalized. And then all of a sudden you watched it, well, maybe not all of a sudden, but very quickly you watched it where laptops got huge and it had everything built in. Remember how thick and heavy they were? Yes. Especially when you've got like that 17-inch like monster. That thing was like 15 pounds. It was unbelievable how big it was. And, you know, and then we kind of, you know, we've tried to figure out ways to bring it back. And you even saw it where the netbook wave, remember that? We're like, oh, here's these super small little tiny laptops that were underpowered and had small keyboards. Yeah, they sold a ton of them. And then it turns out, no, people actually want the full-on keyboard. MacBook Air takes off.
Yeah.
You know? And so you've kind of watched these cycles where the computer manufacturers try to make things small and compact and last a really long time. And then ultimately the customers say, no, we want it all. And we'd rather have all the features and charge it all the time.
Yeah.
And so I have a sneaky suspicion, that the same thing is going to happen with the watch thing, where people are going, oh, people want batteries to last, you know, multiple days so they don't have to charge them. And then they're going to say, yeah, but it's black and white only. Or, you know, it doesn't do this or doesn't do that. And people are eventually going to go, well, I'll charge it every day.
I'll be totally honest. I'm a big fan of the 8 day. If you can't make it to 8 days, you shouldn't do it. You should focus on 1 day. And the reason why is because you either need to charge once a week or once a day. there needs to be a regular cycle, or once a day, once a week, once a month. And which means you got to make it 32 days, 8 days, or, you know, a day and a half. And I really do think that that's the solution moving forward. And I feel like people really, you know, we focus on these like 3-4 days. It drives me nuts charging my Fitbit because it's 5 days. And I forget every once in a while. And it's like, if it's not sending me big notifications regularly, and like I tend to check my Fitbit obsessively, so it's okay because I see it, but it doesn't notify me if it's dying.
Really?
Checking it. Like, yeah, it doesn't, or maybe it does, I don't know.
My phone does.
I check it obsessively. So I would sit there and I'd go, what I really want is something that I know, okay, I just have to charge it every Sunday, or I charge it every Monday, or I charge it, you know. And it's funny, grandfather clockmakers figured that out a century and a half ago. That was the whole idea of the 8-day wind, or the 8-day weights, was you can reset the weights once a week, and I don't know. I sit there and I go, like, that's what's so weird about this is, like, you can tell these things aren't being made by watchmakers, because watchmakers are very, like, they're very in tune to the whole thing, the whole idea of when's the recharge cycle? How do we get people onto a, quote, regular cycle? Because guess what this thing's all about is measuring cycles. And I totally agree. It sounds like this Microsoft ban will last a while, but it's almost as much a pain in the butt as it's not. What I want is an elegant charging solution, not necessarily a battery that lasts 4 days. And I thought the Moto X had one. I hope that the Apple Watch is a similar feel. It'll be interesting, you know, and it's, you know, if all you're looking for is like a little watch and some cool updates, you know, this HP looks like a good alternative to the Pebble, and kind of pricey, but a good alternative. I think Fitbit's interesting. If they're going to make it on the weight of their current popularity and people knowing who they are, because I think theirs look pretty ugly.
I'm good. Yeah, well, and I added that article underneath yours where it was like that Fitbit was the front runner. It was cool. You know? It was like, oh, you want a tracker? You go with Fitbit. And it was like in 2007, they came big time onto the scene. It's kind of like 7 years later, they haven't progressed much and everyone's caught up to them. And it's like all of a sudden there's this feeling of, yeah, you're going to keep a Fitbit because you've been using it and your friends have been using it. And, you know, but they had a very tough week this last week for a couple of reasons. The first one was that they had a product recall of their Fitbit Force. Like, never good when people are breaking out in rashes and getting dermatitis off your product.
Oops. Yeah. Well, I thought that was a while ago.
Yeah, I'm sorry. What did I say? Not best week, best year.
Yeah, right. Fitbit,
sorry. And then what they've also found is that 80% of their wearers only wear them for about 6 months.
I've noticed, as all my friends sort of.
I know. It's annoying, huh?
I'll be honest. Like, I'm totally emotionally prepared for this to be my last Fitbit. I'll keep wearing it until I either lose it or it dies on me. And even after I get the Apple Watch, but I'm not going to replace it. You know, I'm going to get something else. And
I was all pumped about getting like the Aria scale to go with it. And now I'm like, oh, man, we'll see.
I'm so glad I didn't make that purchase, because it's not even that. What I actually want way more than Wi-Fi connectivity is accuracy. Because it turns out it's not that hard to have a spreadsheet where I type in how much I weigh every morning on my phone. Like, it's a
cool. Yeah, but it also did your, what was it? Not your BMI, that other one.
It does. It does your body fat, your BMI, and so does my scale at higher accuracies with greater, like, greater weights. And guess what? Mine also only costs $40. Like, it's cool.
Really?
Yeah, it's just the Weight Watchers glass scale. I mean, they're great. And And they I can't remember who they teamed up with. I actually went through like too many scales to get to that one finally. I bought like super cheap ones, and guess what? They don't work. And if they do, it's only temporary. But I think Fitbit decided to the Aria, the more and more I've studied and looked at scales, it's cool with the whole Wi-Fi connectivity, but I do think that that was another case of them really leveraging their brand in order to sell what's not really as good a scale. And especially from an accuracy perspective, it's one of the it fits the bell horn of your kind of average accuracy, but your average accuracy is only accurate within 2 pounds. 2 pounds. 2 pounds. That's crazy. Like, how can you only be accurate within 2 pounds? Like, people swing 2 pounds every day, like when you fall asleep. That's normal. Like, I don't want that. I want a half a pound at the least. That's the tolerance that I'm like, that's the tolerance where I'm willing to accept it as an accurate measurement. I'd rather us get into the quarter pound, and if we can do a tenth of a pound, that'd be really cool. Like, how is it so hard at $100 for a scale because it's got a Wi-Fi chip in it? Really? Like, I don't know. I like Fitbit. I think it's a good company. I think they're going to get steamrolled. I think they're just going to get, you know, especially because they're not playing nice with the growing platforms.
I've noticed that, and that actually really bugs me, because they were saying in this example too, like the Jawbone Up, like they're integrating with everybody and are really reaching out to be partners and on this Internet of Things, like they're a piece of it.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, Fitbit, they don't care. They're doing their own thing. And when you're not getting advantage of the network effect because friends are dropping off, like, that's tough.
Well, and to me, it's like one of the big reasons I went with Fitbit in the first place is because I did a lot of research into how easy is it to access my raw data. And Fitbit did the best job of that, bar none, over everybody else. They just, you could get it anywhere, anytime. You could get on your app. You could actually, you could pay a small fee and download CVX.
Yeah.
The actual, like, data tape. Thank you. CSV files, like you could get the data and it was yours. Whereas things like, you know, like the Nike Fuel Band, it's all proprietary stuff and it doesn't actually correlate to any real numbers. It's all designed to keep you locked into your little circle. And now all of a sudden they're departing from that in the whole idea of it's not portable. Your data doesn't go wherever you are. And I'm like, well, then I'm out.
That's because they realized that they don't have the best device.
Yep. And that's that, you know, so now what they're trying to do is lock you into your friends, lock you into your, you know, and they do good. They're good products. I'm not super anxious to get rid of it. And if there wasn't a watch that I was, if it weren't for the Apple Watch, I'd already be off of it. I would be onto a basic. I want a heart rate monitor, a continuous heart rate monitor. And Basic's done that for a while. I thought I kind of expected Apple to do what they did, so I waited it out for Apple. But, you know, like I said, it's fun to compete with my friends, and so I'll keep it as long as it's alive, and I don't mind remembering to charge it. But I, you know.
Which, by the way, did you win your competition last week?
Oh, yeah. It was crazy. So it was nuts because one of the number two had he was coming up to 100,000 we were both over 100,000, but he had a 10K. And so I was like pacing.
Oh no.
I was pacing in the terminal to get on my airplane. Like, cause I was just like, oh my gosh, he's catching up. And I only beat him by like 1,000 steps. He pulled an extra like almost 30,000 steps to catch up to me like that last day. It was nuts. Freaked me out, man. I won. Wow. And then I did a 35,000 step the next day with the Tough Mudder, which finally broke that. Got that badge. I've gotten right up to the edge on that badge 3 times. I've gotten into the 33, 34. And it's funny. Once you've gone that far in a day, it is hard to squeeze out that last 1,000 steps right at the end. And I managed it finally.
Where does it Fitbit.com. What does it say? Your badges. I want to see how awesome I am.
Badges? Badges? We don't need no badges.
Let's see. Login?
It should just be like, on your dashboard. If you go, should
give it to me. Remember me.
If you
password secret.
Wow.
Just take your time to load. Don't worry about it. Show's only live. All right. I'm on my dashboard. You took 93,000 steps, dude. It's last week. That's crazy. All right, where's my...
So you got to click on your little picture, your profile page.
Yeah.
And then it's going to be on the right. It's down a little bit under my achievements.
Top badges.
Badges?
Can I see all of them, or does it just give me some of them?
There's a way to see all of them, but I don't know what it is.
Lifetime best.
It should just say your top badges underneath.
Well, yeah, I know, but I want all of them.
Well, but they all work the same. Your step badges are, they go up in 5,000 step increments. Your
mileage... So my best daily step badge is 20,000.
Wow. That's terrible.
Sorry.
Just kidding.
Let's see my...
What's your lifetime steps?
Lifetime steps, 2.5 million. I haven't had it as long as you, okay? Was that at 8 million?
Yeah.
Nice. Okay, how many floors have you gone up?
Okay, now this is where I'm going to get beat, because I haven't been able to track my stairs forever. I'm at 1,800.
1,800? Wow, I actually beat you there. I'm at 3,000.
Well, I haven't been able to track it since I got the Flex, because the Flex doesn't track stairs. Mm. So I haven't been able to track it for...
I've climbed 100 floors.
I've done 100 floors, too. I did that in England.
And what is this one? Lifetime climb badge? 2,000 floors.
Nice.
Hot air balloon.
Nice. Yeah, I'm at lifetime distance badge, 3,000 miles. I've walked across the continental United States.
Dang, I'm only at 1,000. Let's see, my total lifetime distance, I'm like barely. I'm like only 1,100. That's a recent thing.
Yeah.
Man, I'm pathetic.
It's 10:45, James. I think I might have to skip a couple of these.
Oh my gosh, we're already at 2 hours and 15 minutes.
Okay, I'm going to go really quick over. I'm going to skip. So Verizon's getting into journalism, but you're not going to be able to. They're not going to post any articles that are critical of Verizon, bringing their normal...
Love it.
Business ethics and morality to...
sounds about right.
Whatever their endeavors are, which will be awesome. The iPad Classic, why did it get put down? Pretty interesting answer, actually. Basically, they said there are components that we were using to build it. Those components were no longer in the supply chain, which required us to do some re-engineering in order to continue manufacturing it. But the cost to re-engineer it was less than what we thought we'd ever make off of it. So it just died a dismal death of not enough people. We'd kept on making it because if it didn't cost anything, we'd make as many as sold. But we can't make them anymore. So it's just a classic. It's actually like a...
Didn't make sense to retool it.
Yeah, exactly. Which is like, wow, that's kind of sad. Yeah, I mean, this is how the iPod dies? Okay.
That's such an Apple thing too.
Oh yeah.
I mean, you know, if Sony were in charge, it'd keep going for another 20 years. They'd figure it out.
Which I love because I still buy the same Sony over the year behind the head headphones that I've been buying for the last 15 years, and they break after like a year and a half, and then I go and buy a new pair for $15. I'm sure it costs them pennies, but I'm gonna talk about Wintermute in probably another day.
Okay. And then my last one is that Foursquare's numbers are not looking good.
I believe it.
Surprise, surprise. People aren't checking in as often anymore. But Foursquare says they got a plan. They're not going to say what that is, but they got a plan to stem the tide.
Is that just because they totally broke out checking in from their main app?
Well, no. They actually, I don't know. It was kind of like they were watching their downloads and stuff and check-ins go down. When they actually did release them, they got another bump again. But now it's just back down. So it turns out that was a temporary bump. I would say it's not any worse than because they broke it out.
I'll be honest, I've used their app actually more than I have probably in the last year. And I actually like their food discovery. It's not bad. And that's a testament, considering the fact that, like, I'm talking about the area I live in. It's helped me discover restaurants that I didn't know exist. And that's pretty cool. But I don't use it much. So that's not cool. But when I do use it, I like it a lot. So.
Cool. All right, man. That's all the news. Fit for print. Or something.
Cool.
Whew, that was a long show. We're at like 220. Dang. And I thought we were going to go short because I had a headache. So much for that. It just took me a little while to get warmed up. That was the problem. We had a slow start. Ah, yes.
What'd you do this weekend? Nothing.
Nothing.
Wow.
Cool, man. Cool. Well, everybody, thank you for joining us. My name is James Furlow. My world champ, orange-wearing, orange and black-wearing brother, you like that, is Matthew Furlow. And so we will talk next time.